Would you just like to stand up, please, and welcome to the committee. Members, we have is Representative Samuelson here as yet?
Okay.
Would you and your witnesses like to come forward, please? Okay. I don't see your light. Oh, right there. Okay. And I will move House File 58 before the committee and recommend that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill. And members, we have several bills who essentially do the same thing that the Samuelson bill does and that the Slawitz piece on early childhood does. Obviously, we are not going to hear all of them, but somewhere I had here a list of other bills that are pretty much the same. So we'll get this heard today and before our committee for possible inclusion at the end. But also Representative Paymar, Representative Greiling, Representative Bernardi, and Representative Portman have similar bills. And so, in a sense, we're hearing all of those bills today. All right, Representative Samuelson, I understand you have an amendment. Would you like to briefly explain your amendment, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, my amendment actually deletes the 2005 year from the fiscal note, and that is basically because the intention is to have the funds reinstated for the next biennium or the 06 or 07 biennium.
So the 05 is essentially an error.
Right.
Are there any questions about the amendment, members? Then I think the chair would move that we put this bill in the shape that the author wishes it to be. And all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by... Whoops. Do we have a quorum?
No.
We can't vote yet. All right. Let's go on with the testimony. Sorry, I forgot we couldn't vote yet. Why do you want to address your bill and then introduce your witness, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will do that. The House File 68, basically what it does is it reinstitutes back to the pre-2003 level the funding for the early childhood family education programs in the state. And basically that is the bill. And I wanted to mention a couple things. You know, we've all heard that children under school age learn the fastest and absorb the most. We also know that strong families promote healthy children and better living environments. ECFE does both as the program works with parents and children. It has proven children who are nourished in their early years do better in school and in life. A 40-year longevity study in Michigan called the Perry Study showed persons who had positive preschool relationships and early education did better in school and in life. Restoring funding to the early childhood programs is a step in the right direction. I have an author's amendment, which we already discussed, and now I would like to introduce my guest. And this is Sue Stoner, and she will talk about the program.
Welcome, Ms. Stoner.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. As Representative Samuelson said, my name is Sue Stoner, and I'm the Family Education Coordinator for Mountain View Public Schools. Today I would like to talk to you about ECFE and why I would like you to consider restoring funds. I have a lot to tell you, but I will be brief. ECFE is a voluntary public school program that offers information and support to all Minnesota parents and their infants, toddlers, and preschoolers. All families with children from birth to kindergarten are eligible to participate. The core program is weekly classes for parents and children that basically consist of three components: parent discussion groups, guided play and learning time for children, and planned parent-child interaction activities. classes are taught by well-trained, highly qualified teachers and parent educators. Classes range from those open to any family to those serving special populations, young parents, dads, single parents, teen parents, parents with special needs children, parents needing their high school diploma or who are English language learners, parents of Head Start children, among others. The program provides different types and intensities of services to meet specific family situations. The cost for regular weekly programming is based on a sliding fee schedule. In Mound View, it ranges from $24 a year for 26 weeks for a family making less than $15,000 to $354 a year plus sibling care costs for a family making over $150,000. However, no family is turned away for inability to pay. Most CCFB programs collaborate with, support, or are integrally involved with other programs to serve families who would otherwise not be served. Oftentimes, these are the neediest families. For example, Moundview ECFB funds provide the early childhood teacher, classroom space, and materials for the family literacy program. This is an intensive three-day-a-week program that provides early childhood education, parent education, and adult basic education for parents who need their high school diploma, GED, and their preschool-age children. 14 of the 15 families currently being served by this in this program qualify for free lunch. This is a program that is trying to break the intergenerational cycle of poverty and is important because research has shown that a mother's education level is a strong indicator of how well a child, or predictor of how well a child will do in school. Mountview ECFB is also integrally involved with school readiness, and ECFB funds provide an early childhood teacher, classroom space, materials, etc. School readiness is a preschool program for children ages 3.5 to 5. Basically, this program serves children who do not qualify for Head Start but need free or reduced tuition and transportation, who are on the waiting list for Head Start, or who have not passed the early childhood developmental screening but do not qualify for early childhood special ed services. This is a program that is providing preschool experiences for children who otherwise would not have any, for children who are coming from families that are experiencing risk factors and is trying to provide them with the skills that will help make them successful in school. This year in Moundsview, 69 out of the 72 school readiness children qualify for free or reduced lunch, and 34 come from homes where English is not the primary language. I personally believe in ECFB, and research has indicated that ECFB is a worthwhile program. A 1992 study of the general population of ECFB participants, 75% of the parents reported changes in their child's behavior that included improved social interaction, increased sense of self-confidence, improvement in language and communication, growth and independence. And 92% of the parents reported increased knowledge, awareness, and understanding about children, and 72% reported better relationships with their children. In 1996, a study of lower-income ECFB participants, a study which won an award from the American Evaluators Association, parents reported improvements in their children's behavior, including increased independence, better communication skills, improved relationships with other children. Parents also reported improved knowledge and understanding of children and child development. A 1999 study of parents with infants, 90% of those parents reported a better understanding of infant development. 83% said they knew best how to support their child's learning, and 88% felt that isolation was reduced and they had a sense of connectedness to other parents. The school readiness studies have shown that some children still are not ready for kindergarten, and the main recommendation was to support parents in their role as children's first teachers. The most recent study done in 2003, Parent Involvement in Kindergarten and Third Grade Education, what former participants in early childhood family education and other parents report, indicates that parents who became involved early in their child's learning through ECFB had significantly higher levels of involvement with school both at the kindergarten and third grade levels. This is relevant to one of the major themes of No Child Left Behind, strengthening parent partnerships and parental choice. and findings of some other researchers like Dr. Joyce Epstein, who have documented that parent involvement in their child's learning and school is a strong factor in that child's school success. Other things you might want to know. Since 1992, quality indicators have been in place that set the standards for programs like early childhood, family ed, school readiness, etc. Early childhood indicators of progress have come out which provide a framework for helping children meet developmentally appropriate expectations. Currently, a group with input from the Department of Education is working on developing indicators for parent education. Indicators for children under 3 are currently being worked on using the OMS scale. And programs for 3 and 4-year-old children have been using the work sampling assessment system to determine progress of children. So why should ECFE funding be restored? Because ECFE has shown itself to be an effective program. Because ECFE is serving families at all social and economic levels and providing appropriate services. Because we need to ensure that more parents can be involved in their children's learning, not less. And with a 20% cut, significantly less families are able to be served. Because we need to ensure that more children have the opportunity to learn how to be successful. And because ECFE is a high-quality program that contributes to the well-being of every community in Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Stoner. We do have one question for you. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Was it Ms. Stoner?
Mm-hmm.
So, Ms. Stoner. My question is, what kind of ramifications have you seen in the program in Moundsview with the cuts from last year? What has that done to the access to the number of classes? Did the fees get raised? What are the fees? And then how do you feel you're going to be able to live with this amendment, which leaves you in that spot for another year?
Well, I can tell you, my last year's budget was $692,000. This year's budget is $564,000. Because of that cut, I had to reduce the number of weeks by 4, cutting them from 30 to 26. I cut the number of classes by about 15. I laid off 4 staff people. I reduced staff development, and I cut back on every area that I could without directly affecting programming. Now, I was lucky in the sense that I had some weeks that I could work with that I felt I could cut without hurting the integrity of the program. However, I'm in a position for next year, that I have to cut an additional $35,000 just because of declining enrollment. I'm from the Moundsview School District, and Moundsview is experiencing declining enrollment. Next year, I have nowhere to cut. I mean, there isn't. I might have considered some of what I cut this year, you know, frills that I could get by with. I don't have anywhere to cut. So what it's going to mean is that I have to either cut more programming, more weeks. And although we are experiencing declining enrollment, what we are seeing is declining enrollment from those families that are able to pay, and where our enrollment is increasing is the number of families that require more intensive services. So it's kind of a double bind right there. Our fees range anywhere from $24 a year right now to $354, plus additional costs if they need to use sibling care. One of the things I will have to look at is perhaps raising fees, although the majority of our people are kind of in the middle right now in terms of the fees that they are paying. You can't really raise the bottom, and so you have a very small number of people for whom you can actually raise the fees and who will still be able to attend.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Madam Chair, am I misunderstanding the amendment? I saw you shaking your head there.
Well, I believe that this just means that we are beyond budgeting 0405, and we are now budgeting 0607, and this bill still had 05 in it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's correct.
Okay. So, thank you very much, Ms. Stroner. There are two more questions. Representative Biskins?
Madam Chair, are we dealing with the amendment at this time? If we are, my question can wait.
No, just let's finish with her, and then we'll go back. Finish with your questions, and then we'll go back and do the amendment.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Stoner, you made the comment that this program is, you know, you provide services to people of all socioeconomic ranges, and that's a very accurate statement, but having participated in previous discussions on ECFE funding and being in the on this committee in 2002, one of the things that we found out as we delved into this issue was that in a number of ECFE programs, everyone was offered the program without any fees. In fact, there's no statutory language requiring those who can pay to indeed pay. Right? So my question to you, or possibly Representative Samuelson, is does this piece of legislation deal with that? In other words, create a system whereby those who can afford to pay for the service do indeed pay for this service.
I'm fairly sure that
Ms. Stoner.
Madam Chair.
That's okay. That's okay.
I'm fairly sure that it's now in legislation that all districts must provide a sliding fee schedule.
That's right.
And so now what you're going to find is that we don't require proof of income. And so, yes, a family could come in and say, I am unable to pay, and I think in most instances, questions are not going to be asked. But I think in all brochures and all information that goes out, a sliding fee scale is presented to parents saying if you're at this particular level, this is the amount that is expected that you would pay. Now, if sometimes family situations change and we might get a call that says, yes, we were at this level and now my husband is unemployed, what happens? And so family situations change and we take that into consideration.
I'm a stoner. There is, you were right.
Okay.
By law, you are supposed to establish a sliding fee scale, but there's also in there language that says if a family cannot afford to pay at all, there's a waiver of that
right,
fee.
Right, and that's also, I think, explicit in all brochures.
Yeah, makes everyone accessible to this. Representative Biskins, does that answer your question?
It does. I wonder if there shouldn't be a little more stringent safeguards. Because we like to believe everyone is altruistic and good, and most people are. However, I think there are potentials for abuse that we should analyze.
Madam Chair.
Representative Samuelson.
Yeah, Representative Biskins. I also was concerned about the sliding fee scale, feeling that, it maybe needs to be looked at, be addressed, so that people that truly can pay, and I know there are a lot of people that do pay for the program, so that those folks will be able to pay, or the people that will be able to pay certainly are encouraged or mandated to pay. And I think that works well because then the program would be very beneficial for the people that can pay as well as the people that can't. And if some type of track record or records are kept, I think that would be also important.
The theory behind all this is that nobody has a corner on being a good parent, and so therefore it should be accessible to all. Representative Cleansing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have three questions. The first one is, what is the price or cost per enrolled student for an ECFE program? Because obviously, whatever the sliding fee is that gets paid, it costs more than that because we have to provide some money by the government. And so per enrolled student, what is that cost for you guys to run the program? And secondly, when you talked about you have to cut money due to declining enrollment, is that declining enrollment due to the population of those kids eligible to enroll is going down, or just simply because people are not signing up? And I know you mentioned some folks aren't signing up because they feel it's cost prohibitive at that point. So is it? Do you have, what kind of information or evidence do you have that it is a cost prohibitive thing? Is it just anecdotal, or have you been taking surveys, et cetera? And then the last question I had was about, we had originally proposed last year $106 instead of $120 being...
We had proposed just $20 was decreased from the original formula.
Okay.
We had proposed that that only be $12, but we were, two years ago this was, we were not successful in conference committee in keeping it to only $12.
Okay, so how would that have affected your program if we were able to just keep it to a $12 reduction as opposed to the
$20? Okay. Ms. Stoner, if you can answer all those as briefly as possible, we'd appreciate it.
Average cost last year was $443 per child. Now, you have to understand, because of the different services we're providing, that's going to vary, but that was the average. Declining enrollment in Moundsview is happening because people are buying their house and are staying there, and their children are aging and growing out of the system. However, at the same time, we are having families move in who require more intensive services, who require more marketing. They're not just the families who are walking in the door, and so facing declining enrollment overall, but having to make more of an effort to reach those families. And then, yes, the $106 would have been easier to live with because it's more than $90. And so I guess it still would have been a cut, but less of a cut and perhaps a little more manageable.
Quick follow-up.
Representative Clancy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You talked about intensive services, including the marketing and outreach to try to get the folks to come to the courses. Are there any other intensive services that are being required besides the marketing? And secondly, what was the evidence that you had that the declining enrollment might be due to the fee increase?
Ms. Stoner.
Madam Chair, the more intensive services are families who perhaps don't speak English, children who have had no prior experience and so need a greater intensive preschool experience, younger, more transient families, more young parents who do not have any support services surrounding them. I do not have anything scientifically based that shows that as the cost went up, parents were less, except the fact that as we increase the cost, the amount that we are bringing in isn't going up, and so I think what happens is people take it one step down on the sliding fee schedule.
All right, Representative Bernardi, this will be the last question for this witness, and then we will be looking at the amendment and then moving on to Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question regarding cost, too, as well as, and thank you for your service to our community, by the way. I get a lot of constituents telling me how important this program is to them and want me to really fight for it. So, anyway, the question I have is the $354 or the $443 you had mentioned, is that, I am an ECFE parent myself, although it was a while ago now. Mm-hmm. I just want to do kind of a ballpark frame. What I used to pay wasn't very much at all. Would I be paying that much for my child to be going to ECFE, like over $300 or $400 for a class, or is that for a year, or what? And then the other question I have is, you talked about the cuts to the number of classes and the staff and that sort of thing. How many families do you think are getting turned away, or children are getting turned away? Do you have a ballpark figure? I know one time I couldn't get in the class, and it was really disappointing to my child and I, because they're only that age for such a short time, and to miss out on a few months class because there wasn't enough room is disappointing. And so are there disappointed parents that can't get in?
Ms. Stoner, if you could briefly mention again the variance in income
right. Go
on your scale.
The $354 is for those families who are making over $150,000. a year. That does not include child care costs. That's the very top of our sliding fee schedule. It goes all the way down then to families making less than $15,000. They would pay $24,000. There is about seven steps to it, with costs ranging anywhere in between that. If you're making about $70,000, you're probably paying about $162 a year plus sibling care costs. So even in those middle ranges, you're paying $162, $198, $250-some dollars a year now to attend. We had about 30 to 50 people on a waiting list in the fall.
Thank you very much, Ms. Stoner. All right, we are going to move on.
Madam Chair.
Representative Samuelson.
I do have another witness, and she has a very short presentation. She is one of the parents that actually used the program.
All right, Representative Samuelson, I didn't realize that. We will have a very brief statement then from
her
because we don't need to hear the same points again, but we can certainly hear briefly from your other witness. And while she's coming up, Mr. Strom, would you just briefly, since there were some people not in the room, go through the amendment, and then we'll vote on it.
Madam Chair, members, the amendment is H058A1. This amendment makes the change prospective beginning in fiscal year 2006. So the 2005 level would remain at $96. For 2006 and later, the amount would go to $120.